racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back, and a little bit into hour two, we'll do some Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. But hearing Jason Beam and the notes for Colonial Day Two yesterday, and a couple of interesting day. Had a little bit of steward intervention. You had an interesting 2-year-old filly, Sequist. A winner for West Point, Gervais Racing, Charlie Pig, and partners for Dallas Stewart. I mean, there is just this, wide array of outfits that are shipping in to Colonial. Sequist, a Nyquist, bred by Clear Sky, and this $100,000 purchase at Keeneland. And out of a Flanders Fields mare. Wow. I'm going to ask Sid about that. And you had a little everything. How about Fenica Bentley winning the first and the third yesterday as well? You had that DQ in the fourth that elevated Wow, What a Summer. This for Chucky Lawrence and A. Della Pierre. How about the stake? I should slip the stake result in, too, while we got a chance. You had Mark Reed for Grace Merriman and Exculpatory. Carol Cedeno. Win well, actually, at a square price, $1,360. And this one coming out of an allowance at Pimlico. That was the Housebuster and Grand Motion and Al Shakab win with a Toronado mare, tuned, nice stakes mare, actually dropping down. Ollie Figgins a winner. Nice day of racing. Day two at Colonial. They'll conclude their first few days today. Going to turn to Sid. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you? I caught the last part of your interview with Pete, and I remember like a few years ago he bought when I was over there, and I did a live show with you at Sarasota.
That's right. That's right.
He was right beforehand with his daughter, and during the break, you like ran over somewhere, bought some donuts, and brought them back for her. So I distinctly remember that when he made the donut reference about her.
They had the cutest pink, the donut with pink frosting and in a little individual box, like a little gift box. Over there. In fact, I will put that picture up today in view of Pete's visit. So I'm glad you reminded. And I got a great picture. I'll put up the picture today with your visit. I'll put you up in the you were sitting in the. I got a good picture of you sitting in the shoeshine chair.
Oh yeah, that was the guy that you almost got into. That guy almost got into a fight with you.
That guy.
And
that
what
guy.
Happened was, yeah, that guy was crazy.
So he is crazy.
The show. And I walked away, and then I turned around like a half hour later, and I see this guy confronting you. Uh-oh. Actually, I was with Frances that day because she was there too. She said, "Oh my God, look what's happening over there!" I ran over there ready to throw some punches. So it looked like this guy was, but you were very impressive. You just completely talked the guy down. I mean, he was a hothead.
He's a character, boy. He's a live wire. I did not see him opening day. I mean, the chair is there, but I didn't see him. And, of course, he took over after Chico's long run as the Shine Man. And I'll have to see today, actually, because I didn't. Sunday was such a blech day. So I did TV, and I didn't go over, but I didn't stay there. Came back after we had a interesting weekend, Sid. We're going to talk about win approval in a minute and the amazing broodmare career. But I got to get your take on what happened down at Oceanport. It was down at Monmouth for Haskell, and here's Mandaloon elevated and Hot Rod Charlie, who's becoming. Not just Hot Rod Charlie, both he and Midnight Bourbon are feeling a little snake bit here as the season goes on. Some thoughts about Saturday down at Monmouth.
Well, to preface that, I have to say that Judmont has got to be one of the luckiest owners that have ever raised horses, because somebody had put up about how, you know, the horse could back himself into this Haskell and the Derby of two DQs, and that would never happen again in a lifetime. And we pointed out on the Sire Watch Twitter feed, when I saw that, I told one of our people who handles our account that, this happened in 2010 with Judd Mon with special duty, backed into the 1,000 guineas and the French guineas, French 1,000 guineas, also off two DQs. And then when you put that in context with Judmon winning the 2,000 guineas was known fact off a DQ, and winning an arc with Rainbow Quest off a DQ, that's all told right there. There's six G1 races that Judmon would have won off DQs.
How about that?
I saw that
Francis or the Sire Watch account made that point, that's pretty funny. Well, there may be even a bigger skin to add to that list yet.
Yeah.
Well,
that's right.
I'm not going to ask you how did you view the DQ, because there was no question that it was going to be a DQ. But I think I brought this up in a different vein. I did after a couple of the regional, after the Iowa Derby and the Indiana Derby. How does the market, and obviously Mandaloon's an into mischief and you're talking about a fancy pedigree, but how? How do breeders understand, these kinds of incidents and circumstances? And when it comes to, the value in the stallion barn and, the way in which resumes are affected by this kind of thing, what's the fallout, or is there any harm, or does the marketplace pretty much know what these horses are and having been taken down or so forth, everybody realizes the performance was the performance.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the horse and the pedigree and perhaps, form before the race and form after the race. But in this case, you're talking about a great Judmon pedigree. You're talking about, the top sire in the country at the moment, arguably Into Mischief. So you've got this great pedigree. He's a horse that obviously will continue to race on, and he wins a race, another grade one or something. I think it's all water under the bridge. He's got these races. He's going to have potentially these races on his resume. You take a horse like that, he's at a different level, say, than a horse like Country House, who backed into the Derby off the Maximum Security DQ. He never raced again. He hadn't done much beforehand. So he goes and sets for $7,500, and it's a different kind of situation with him. He is more inexpensive than Mandaloon will be. Doesn't have the kind of clout the Mandaloon has outside of these races, plus the pedigree involved. So, you know, a horse gets DQ'd. There's a lot of factors involved, but it's got to come down to the horse itself for these breeders anyway. And I think judging on the individual pedigree, the sires involved, and the circumstances, you know, it's not going to hurt this horse if he goes to stud with that those races on his resume. And if he were to go on and win another Grade 1 race, I think, you know, people are going to feel a lot better. He put in two great performances anyway, you know. Not to hammer away at Country House. I can't remember if Country House was even a stakes winner prior to the Derby. And, of course, the Derby was his last race. So I think, you know, the story's got to play out. But I think they're two different, you know, apples and oranges with that comparison. This horse is, a much bigger horse now. For example, with Khalid Abdullah's two I just referenced, Known Fact and Rainbow Quest, you know, they had resumes prior to that and afterwards, and both went on to be really notable stallions as well. So it depends, again, Steve, on the horse.
Well, you hope, you know, for the connections, and particularly for the Hot Rod Charlie connections, because it's such a nice story that's involved, and you know, you want good horses like this to get their individual accolade and you know their big prize. You never want a race of that magnitude, you know, decided in the steward stand, but you know there was no choice when it came to, you know, to how this one was going to, you know, where this one was going to be adjudicated. So, all
right. Yeah, I mean, I also, you know, it's weird. I texted you about this after the race, too. I mean, you know, so many, you know, everybody's got an opinion on this thing with the whip rule over there and whatnot. You know, nobody can say. Everybody's just got an opinion on it. You know, it's kind of interesting how, you know, some people tend to forcefully put out their opinion that, nah, it didn't, the whip did or didn't have an effect. But nobody can really say for sure whether the whip could have avoided this situation or, you know, would not have created the situation, or it would have stood. Again, you know, it just adds another component to the discussion, for sure. But, you know, I can't take seriously anybody who argues it one way or another decisively, because it's so difficult to say, you know.
Yeah, and it doesn't even, frankly, it doesn't particularly matter. It you know, the circumstance. I know that Pratt, seemingly to me, Pratt paid lip service to the, you know, to the cause, quote unquote, of you know, riders objecting to this, and you know, not to. You know, take any issue with the Jockeys Guild and Johnny and you know, Terry Meeks and everybody, but I've heard from too many riders at this point. Between we'll hear from Tony tomorrow, but Mig on Monday, Ramon Dominguez was with me on TV. I'm not sure I didn't tape the NBC broadcast, but when it came to Bailey, but it didn't necessarily seem like a spot where there was even any particular concern by Pratt that he hadn't cleared yet, and so saying that, oh, I could have gone to the left hand. You could have gone to the left hand. You could have used your right hand with the rein and just, you know, kept him you know, in the same path for another couple of strides. So, and mm-hmm. and we've also made the point that, and Rich fleshed this out, and this also got confirmation from Tony and from Ramon Dominguez, that inadvertently, Paco Lopez, you can see Lopez with his right hand turn the head of Midnight Bourbon and try mm-hmm. to jump, basically jump, you know, thinking he still had horse, jump the heels at the same time and trying to get back outside. So he kind of mm-hmm. steered into the heels. And listen, it's a heel clip incident. They're going, you know, 38 miles an hour. It's part of, you know, on a daily basis. It just so happened this is, you know, a seven-figure, you know, grade one with all the top three-year-olds in the country on the racetrack within, you know, a couple of yards of each other.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a, yeah, exactly. Cases can be made in any way you want to do it. I mean, you can also envision cases, scenarios that didn't have bear, where, you know, a horse does bear in and a rider, you know, might be able to use the crop or the whip to straighten the horse out. So it's not, it's an issue where, you know, what I find, Steve, is that all the retired guys, guys like Mig and Jerry Bailey, you know, great guys, they tend to be now that they're not riding, no whip guys, and the guys like Johnny and guys that are riding are the whip guys. So even when you get into the whip discussion among the riders, you see separation depending on where you are, whether you're riding or whether you're retired, you know. The retired guys used the whip plenty of times, but now that they're not riding, it's easier for them to go the other way. So again, I just wanted to throw that out there, that I don't think we can make any definitive statements. Obviously, we can't. Everybody's going to have their opinion on it. But I think in any opinion, I think you've shown pretty good judgment in weighing all sides to it in this particular incident. And you're right. You know, it did look like he just cleared him and didn't even realize the horse was there. And the horse looked like he was beat when he passed him, you know. So who knew he was going to, you know, try again? So you're right on that. But it was, thank God, nothing happened, obviously. And what an athletic recovery, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it brings back, you know, several famous ones, you know, Ali Sheba, Fleet Alex. You know, it's amazing these horses, what they can do sometimes.
And I don't know if you're not really involved on Twitter but these days, but Scott Blasi took a tremendous video of Bourbon when he got back to Saratoga. They put him in the round pen.
Yeah.
And he's going nuts. It's so much fun. He rolls on his back a couple of times, then he jumps up.
That's great.
He's you know, obviously a happy horse that, I mean, frankly, they won't do it, but they could almost run him back in the Jim Dandy next week. To be honest, the way he was acting, but I mean that's.
And the thing is, that horse is a big horse too.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He looks obviously next to Hot Rod Charlie, he looks bigger probably than maybe he is, because Hot Rod looks like a small horse, but he does look like a big horse. And he's a kid now. Does look really pretty big and very, very, very athletic performance. Wow. So happy that, you know, this major tragedy was averted.
Exactly. Sid, a couple of other results before we talk about Win Approval and her incredible Blue Hen legacy. Four millionaires, two Breeders' Cup wins, champions. Unbelievable. We'll do it in a second.
Was it four millionaires?
Four millionaires, yeah.
Oh, four. That's right. Yeah, four. Jeez.
Revved up as
something.
Well.
And I always forget him. Yeah.
Well, and he was the first. I want to quickly hit on the the first stake wins for a couple of stallions, because Witt, who we talked to Todd yesterday, gets the first stake win for Practical Joke in the Sanford, and a little under the radar, and I had Jack Sisterson yesterday, but Tango Tango Tango, Tourist gets his first stake winner in the American Derby. So a couple of notes, you know, three-year-old and a two-year-old, but kind of the first, you know, mid-season, there'll be a lot of this. First graded stake wins, first grade one wins, and all that.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, if you recall in our conversation last week, we were just going over the Phasing Dip in July sale, and you pointed out, you know, we were talking about the first crop horses, you know, which historically, you know, tend to get really good prices. And you pointed out how the second crop yearlings of Practical Joke were selling like off the charts, right? Yeah. And we made a comment about how unusual that is, that the Practical Joke second crop yearlings were selling so well. Well, you know what? Everybody was in the know. You know, people were understood that these yearlings that were out there were great looking. The two-year-olds were training well. He's already had some winners, including a really good, Witt. And Witt was being pointed for this race. And, you know, there was a lot of what might be called inside money on those yearlings in retrospect. Because, boy, those guys look really smart 5 days later, 4 days later, with this horse winning as big as he did in that race, and giving this first crop sire, sent him into mischief. Speaking of into mischief with Mandaloon, into mischief, grade one winner here, Practical Joke at Ashford Stud. Grade one winner at two and three, by the way. He won Champagne at two and then came back, I think it was in the Woody Stevens or one of the sprints, three. But, inside knowledge, inside money coming down hard on those Practical Joke second crop yearlings at Phasing Dip in July pays off here with this big, massive win. Yeah, that's exactly what people want with a first crop sire. Contrast this with Tourist. In Tourist, as you pointed out, first graded winner as a 3 year old. So first crop at three, there's a big difference, Steve, in how it affects a stallion's career if you come out firing at two versus three, because you get an extra year. Now, keep in mind that when a horse's first crop is 2 years old, that means he's got 2 year-olds, yearlings, weanlings, and mares and foals, right? Those mares and foals were this year, so that's fourth crop. It's his fourth year at stud. So, keep this analogy in mind. If he doesn't do anything this year, next year when he has 3 year-olds, that's his fifth year at stud, he's not going to get any mares. And because he hasn't done anything with his 2 year-old. So, but what that means is, if he's lucky enough to be around, that fifth year is going to be a really bad year down the line, right? So what they want, what people, stallion managers want, is that success at two, so that when the first crop turns three, there are plenty of mares coming into that horse. Now, in the Tourist case, his grade winner at three didn't have anything really to speak of last year, so he probably suffered this year in his fifth year at stud. And, you know, anybody associated with a horse really winces when that happens. I mean, they're happy to get this one at three, but they would have preferred it at two, as we're saying with the Practical Joke, because that's the way the sausage gets made in this commercial market price.
Well, and we'll see obviously more of that coming up in just a few weeks with the Select sale and the New York Bred sale to follow, Phasing Tipton. And slip in a note as well, Sid, with a stallion like Taurus that seemingly going to stud felt like a stallion that would be versatile, would tick a couple of different boxes. And you know, you haven't really heard his name much, but it still feels like, you know, there's some things there, perhaps, you know, yet to come.
Well, yeah, and Taurus stands at Windstar, and you know, he is a son, a very accomplished son of their, you know, flagship stallion for a while, Chisnau. Chisnau, of course, also the sire of the horse that we just referenced earlier, who almost went down, Midnight Bourbon. Now, what you have with Chisnau is, this is interesting, you know, because I'm sure most of your listeners understand this, but Chisnau, one of the last conduits of the Man of War sire line. So it's really American sire line. It goes back to what people might remember in more recent times. In Reality had Relaunch, not a great good horse, but Relaunch had a son named C. Tizzy that was just Stakes Place out in California. He came up with Chisnau. And so Chisnau, this line was hanging by a thread, and Chisnau became a really vigorous representative of the line. Unfortunately, what happened with Chisnau is that his sons have not continued onwards. And so, you know, even Windstar, they've had several gemologists. Another notable Chisnau hasn't really done much. He was sent away. They've got Taurus. They've been hoping for a son. You know, Midnight Bourbon is potentially another stallion son of Chisnau. But basically, as a stallion maker, Chisnau is off the boil. So for Taurus to come up with this horse and show life, that's great. That's great for the breed, too. Hopefully, you know, people back this horse, and we keep this, you know, breeders keep this sire line continuing forward, because this is our last link to Man of War. In this country, really.
Well, I was curious when I happened to watch the Tango win that, and having, you know, noted Witt's win in the Sanford, I said, yeah, let me look at, and I simultaneously had tweeted about English Channel with Busy Channel getting his 54th stake winner. And so then I said, let me look at Taurus. Because I thought to myself, I don't think Taurus is, you know, had a notable stake winner yet. So kind of a, you know.
Yeah, and he's a nice. G1 winner. You know, he's a top horse. Yeah.
No, absolute. And it's interesting. One of the interesting things about Taurus too is that it somewhat fits the Unbridled Song narrative about broodmare sire, that you know, with his frustrations at getting a son to replace him, but that the dam and Unbridled Melody, Taurus Dam. So there's you know, there's that in there. In fact,
very good point.
You know, this is actually a female family between Unbridled Melody by Unbridled Song, Sky Castles by Sky Classic. So you got Nijinsky in there and Northern Dancer. Then you've got My Sea Castles by Polish Navy, who was Danzig. And Fourth Dam Mysteries was a daughter of Seattle Slough. I mean, this really is a pedigree that should mesh with a lot of different mares.
Yeah. You know, it just so happens, when you've been observing this for a long time, that there are certain lines that become vigorous male lines, and there are some that just, and give it to you, what you just mentioned on Bridal Song, although they have great sons and stuff, they for some reason, they don't have longevity as sires. And but in his case, he's becoming a tremendous broodmare stallion. You know, I don't know. You know, you never know why it happens. But 'tis now. Remember, he also had that son, Morning Line. He went to stud at Lane's End. He didn't do anything. I mentioned Gemologist. You know, so these 'tis now horses, they've had plenty of, you know, quite a bit of opportunity as stallions. Really, you know, you're hoping that there's always one. Same with Unbridled Song. You know, the big profile I've watched with Unbridled Song stallions is they start off hot, and for some reason they peter out. You know, just in recent times, Dunkirk sent Unbridled Song. You know, he was like the leading freshman sire of his year. Then he was sold to Japan. Look at Cross Traffic at Spencer. He was the leading freshman stallion of his year. He's still going on. But, you know, they tend to have a tougher time. Now, the big hope has been, in recent times, Liam's Map has done really well. And appears like, you know, he may be sticking around. And then, of course, in the wings, and this sets up for the yearling sales this year, Arrogant, who only had, you know, three crowds before he died. His first yearlings are selling. And he's going to have very limited opportunity to do it, but tying back into Judmont, that's where he stood. Judmont themselves had an Unbridled Song before called First Defense. He wasn't doing it for them. They had to send him out, sold him to Saudi Arabia. By the way, the year they end up selling him is when he probably got his best horse, the Guineas winner in Europe, Fiskin. But you know, they had Arrogant, and he looked like perhaps he would be the last great hope, and he died early. But he's going to have some well-bred yearlings, and maybe, you know, as you know, maybe it just comes out from the horse that almost died. If you look at the Seeking the Gold sire line, for example, it's really being carried on by Dubawi in Europe, right? Dubawi is the son of Dubai Millennium, who only had one crop. He died, but that one crop provided the one son that's become a terrific, one of the top stallions in the world, and the line is, you know, proliferating now with his sons at stud. So, you know, maybe a similar situation would happen with Arrogant, you know, few crops, but in one of those few crops, you have the sun that, you know, goes forward. So the story's not over yet.
No, and that's why we track them. that's the motivation. I don't remember ever having a tourist discussion, but this really is it's an international melange of blood, including French and Canada, and here's Leafard, and I mean there's just a little bit of everything going on. And you know, it's funny with as nice a pedigree as she had, Unbridled Melody. She was a modest, you know, she won three races, made $65,000, you know, but she turns around and gets tourist, and with the help of Unbridled Song. So he's one of those that people will, you know, 20 years from now will say, well, he wasn't much of a sire. And it's like, whoa. Relax. Yeah. Well, speaking of broodmares, in the shadow of Mrs. Weber's seminal Blue Hen, this is an amazing story that really, it's been fleshed out and it's been told, you know, with each successive brilliant son that she produced, it's really remarkable. And in fact, Pat Kelly called me this morning, Sid, because he had, you know, he heard me let people know that Win Approval had been euthanized at the age of 29 at the farm, with everybody, you know, on hand to say goodbye to her. And He said that, in fact, he and his dad had to, you know, really kind of push to keep her. And, you know, then with the series of stallions, other than Ghost Zapper, she produced Millionaires with Sultry Song, Miesque's Son, and Northern Afleet. It's quite something. And, you know, all of her sons, I mean, she had some fillies, but none of the fillies really did much, and if anything. And these four geldings, or actually three geldings and one colt, because Miesque's approval, I want to say, went to Turkey, I believe.
Yeah, he went out to one of those countries, there's no question about it. But your point is extremely well made, because, you know, to get these type of horses from these types of stallions, you know, it's pretty amazing. If you talk about Miesque's approval, keep in mind that Live Oak bred Miesque's approval themselves. Miesque's approval was a G1 winner, but he was the son of a horse called Miesque's Son, who is the son of Miesque by Mr. Prospector, therefore a full brother to King Mambo, but not much of a stallion whatsoever. So, you know, you go back and you look at this, Mrs. Weber bred Miesque's approval from a dud. That was Miesque's Son. Then she bred her mare to Miesque's approval and got that horse, right? So it's really quite remarkable, some of the stuff, when you go back and look at what she's done. For example, Win Approval was also bred to, look at one of the sons. I don't have it in front of me, but there was a stallion called High Fly.
That was her horse.
That was her horse, too. He was a grade one winner. He
Florida
was
Derby.
By Atticus.
Yeah,
who was
that's
a
right.
Failure at stud.
That's right.
He was a failure at stud. So she got High Fly from a failure at stud with Atticus, and she got Miesque's Approval as a failure by the failure Miesque's Son. So when you look forensically at the pedigree of this remarkable broodmare of the year, you're going to find adjuncts to the story in her story. You just look up some of the horses that she's bred to, and you find Mrs. Weber's story there, and about how she defied the odds, even with some of the horses that this mare was bred to. You know, we mentioned High Fly, and the mare, of course, she was then bred her mare to High Fly, didn't get anything right from High Fly. But she did get, you know, from Miesque's Approval, what was his name? Miesque's Son.
Miesque's Son, but I got Miesque's Approval, and the... Just going back and forth here, because there's an amazing, there's, you know, she had actually also bred Win Approval's Dam, Negotiator, as well. But Sultry Song, Revved Up, was the first cover, and then the next was Miesque's Son with Miesque's Approval. And between the two of them, they won 32 races in 84 starts.
Yeah. And keep in mind that Miesque's Son, who we just referenced, by, out of Miesque, by Mr. Prospector, was a full brother to King Mambo. That horse was a terrible stallion. He was a G3 winner, so he wasn't a G1 winner. But, you know, he could not get out of his own way. And what does she do? Bam. She gets this, right? and so it's really the story of, you know, how she's fashioned this pedigree to get Miesque's Approval by the stallion Miesque's Son, who was really a terrible horse. You go through here and you see I mentioned High Fly just in passing because the mayor was bred to High Fly too. But, you know, Sultry Song, you know, once again, Sultry Song was not a very good stallion, okay? But Sultry Song, who got revved up, the horse that we keep forgetting, Sultry Song himself was a Live Oak homebred, who was a G1 winner by Cox's Ridge. And so you can see that she's bred to some of her own stallions. And in some of these cases, as in the case with Revved Up and with Sultry Song, you know, got a millionaire for her own homebred G1 winner, Sultry Song, who, you know, wasn't in the grand scheme of things a great stallion. He's by Cox's Ridge. But I would, for any pedigree aficionado, I would go and take a look at the produce record of this mare. And it really stands out more when you look at the fact that not only did she get some of these big horses by some off the beaten path stallions, when you, you know, look back in retrospect, but some of them were hers that were,
oh yeah,
you know, good stallions, and she got like almost the best son of them with this mare.
And that includes later. There was a period where win approval kind of struck out for 6-7 seasons after Mies approval, and it took Mies approval, you know, quite a while to, you know, to really hit his best stride. I mean, it really wasn't until he was 6 and 7 that that he took off after a turnout. And
yeah,
came back, and Marty Wolfson, there's wonderful stories about Mies approval. And I got to spend a lot of time at Calder around that time. And the Carla Wolfson, you know, Mies approval had famously gotten very sour. And he was sent to the farm. And at a certain point, they kind of noticed that he was acting better. And so they sent... you know, Ms. Weber was doing well with Marty, and Mies approval had started with Bill Mott. And so Carla used to get on him, and for the longest time, he wouldn't train. And she literally would let him walk anywhere he wanted to go in on the grounds at Calder. If he didn't want to enter the racetrack, she would just sit on him, and if he wanted to wander around, if he wanted to, you know, go over to what they called Vietnam, he could do whatever. And then finally, after I forget how long, a month of it or 6 weeks of it, at one point he turned, and when Carla took him by the gap, he went through the gap and started to train again.
Wow, what a great story.
But it was Carla. Carla worked with him, extensively to get him back to train, because he had just had enough at a certain point. And, you know, he went on, you know, an extended tear. And I said Turkey before. That was wrong. South Africa is where he has stood. After Mies approval, she tried, Charlotte tried He's a Bull, she tried Distant View, Running Stag, and you mentioned High Fly, and then hits with Go Sapper in 2008 with ZA approval, and yeah, after a More Than Ready Daughter, Victorious One,
mm-hmm,
then got the last, you know, she started to have trouble about 10 years ago, and you know, she was getting to be 19, 20, and she had a little bit of trouble getting in foal 2009, 2011, and 2013. So after world approval, she was pensioned, but she got world approval with Northern Affleet, who was a very useful stallion, but, you know, that's, you know, obviously a Fleet Alex, but world approval was absolutely terrific.
And Northern Affleet, you know, was standing, you know, for $5,000, basically. A very good underutilized, appreciated stallion. But yeah, I mean, you know, he was a stallion that rarely got mares of this quality.
And I'm just looking.
It was an inspired mating, I gotta say. It was a really inspired mating. And it's really a it's a great story about a breeder with a mare. And as you just listed all the stallions, Steve, you know, they were either cheap or they were not good. So, you know, just to go through this list of stallions that she was bred to, Sultry Song, Yes, Son. She was bred to Editor's Note. He wasn't that good. He's a Bull. The Distant View, a Judmont, son of Mr. Prospector, who didn't do much. The one really good first stallion that she was bred to, Pulpit, was she was Barren. Then she was bred to Running Stag, you know. You know, Adina Springs, horse, German bloodlines, I mean, really not much. And she was bred to High Fly, of course, hers. And then finally Goat Zapper, was she really the best one, followed by More Than Ready. So really, in this entire career, if you want to look at it, she's really two good stallions that she had foals by were Goat Zapper and More Than Ready.
Whenever Running Stag's name comes up, I slip in my story. I should look up what stake he was at. He was in the stakes barn at Saratoga, and I had a friend who was working, I forget who she was working for, and we were walking around one night after hours, and I was wearing a navy blazer with gold buttons, and Running Stag was fascinated, you know, if I moved my arm, and he took a hold of my jacket, a cuff, and was mm-hmm. not interested in letting go. And when, it took quite a bit to get the jacket out of his mouth. That's my Running Stag story.
That's fine. And by the way, to tie it in, Running Stag, another Judmont horse.
Absolutely. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I this one... you know, having really over this whole after really the whole period of her produce, getting you know to know Mrs. Weber well, and you know, really a privilege to be in photographs with the several of these, and in fact, I may have. I don't know if I've got. I don't have. I missed. I couldn't get down from the sixth floor at Churchill. I could not get down to the winner's circle at Churchill for that Breeders' Cup. The elevator, and by the time I got downstairs, it was too late. But I, because I was up on. I should have come down actually to the. That was stupid. I should have come down to the paddock for the race. But I was fortunate to be. With Mrs. Weber at Del Mar for world approval, and that was pretty special.
No, that's great. That's a great story.
And I've got a picture with revved up too. I forget why she. You know, I hope Charlotte doesn't mind me saying this. She was really nonplussed when the Jockey Club allowed the name Revved Up to be used a second time. She was not happy.
Yeah,
because here's a multiple multiple stake winner, a graded stake winner. It's kind of weird, right? That they let the name get used again.
Yeah, particularly from a mare that goes in catalog print as Broodmare of the Year.
Good point. Great point.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Win approval, 29, and it's funny that, you know, she really is not going to have, she does have the dam, you know, some of the fillies that are, you know, producing, but not, it seems unlikely that she's going to be able to, you know, to duplicate herself.
Never say never.
That's true. You know, it is a funny. That's true. It is a funny scenario.
When Judmont won those two classics, the Guineas with Special Duty, would they ever have thought that they would back into a classic and another grade one on a DQ with another horse down the road? I doubt it. And yet they did.
Hmm. Well, and Victorious One, the More Than Ready daughter, she's got she's had three geldings in a row, but finally she did produce a filly this winter. She's got a Mendelsohn filly on the ground. So that that'll be the next opportunity, it would seem, to to keep the female side of this, keep that ball in the air, because highest approval, I don't think has she. She had three. She did have a decent Roman ruler, but a gelding, Roman approval. And who does that leave? Going back a little further, I don't think any of the other daughters have stayed on really as broodmares, like Winning Doe, the Running Stag. Actually, I take that back a little bit. I take that back. Winning Doe, she did get that stake winner, We Dear You. In fact, won at Saratoga for Mike Trombetta, the hat trick. One of the horse. Charlotte has effectively used the hat trick, but there's a McLean's Music weanling right now. There's a hard spun yearling filly, so there are three fillies from the family that that we'll root for.
Yeah, and keep in mind, Steve, that she's done this kind of stuff before, because one of the stallions that we just noted in this Sultry Song, Sultry Song was one of several millionaires and black type winners from her mare Sultry Son, and the same type of profile. They ran forever. They ran as older horses. Her mare Sultry Son had Solar Splendor, who won a million graded black type place winner. Sultry Song, who won a million graded black type winner, as well as Seeking Approval. No, not Seeking Approval, but there was another one. Strategic Mission, graded black type winner, won 400,000. She's done this kind of stuff before. And now she's doing it with this particular family,
Sure.
So it's a real feather in the cap. It's an old style home breeding program. They use a lot of the stallions they're familiar with. They're not they don't chase a lot of the commercial horses, and they'll geld colts and run them, until they're 7, 8, 9. And they develop these families that way. And a lot of the, if you mix and match these two mares and combine these two mares, Sultry Son and Win Approval, have together produced, Steve, 7 black type winners and 6 millionaires.
Amazing. Unbelievable.
Just two mares that she's had.
Yep.
Stallions that aren't,
Exactly.
And historically, when you go back, as you pointed out, not, lasting influences.
No, and even her most recent grade one winner, win. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you think about what win has done, and hat trick, right?
Right.
Another obscurity
was sent abroad.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of funny. It's kind of funny. Sid,
really,
this was
really
this,
quite amazing. Yeah, great.
This was tremendous.
Thanks.
This was great. I appreciate the Haskell look and the tourist and practical joke, and we absolutely have to pay tribute to, appropriate tribute to Mrs. Weber and good approval.
I'll talk to you next week.
Well, you bet. And we'll be inching closer toward the sale, too. And that'll probably start to get some of our focus. Sid Fernando, everybody, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. And, of course, Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. And time is now. I mean, these next 3-4 months, you got to start to make your decisions on your breed to race products or your breed to sell products. And Sid will help you, and Roger Lyons and the team. Let's take the top of the hour break, again, a little bit past. And when we come back, Bill Downs going to come by, and we're going to look at a few of the Indiana races today, a couple of stakes, and some nice, actually a couple of other spots, too. And then I mentioned Tom Law and John Chapazian. We're going to do some roundtable handicapping of today's card, and we'll get some opinions, some overall opinions of the early portion of the meet. Chapazian, kind of the handicapper's handicapper. He's been the lead opinion in the Saratoga Special for the last, I don't even know how long. I don't know, 10 years? And it'll be an overdue pleasure to get Chapazian on with Tom Law, and we'll get I'm also going to see about the scratches here. Skies have darkened a little, at least, you know, we're 13 miles east, hopefully we only have the two races off the turf that are already, if you hadn't heard, the 3rd and the 10th, and the Jonathan Kaiser canceled, postponed, I should say. Back after this, Hour 3 at the Races, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself.